everyone. I'm Grace.
And I'm Zoe,
the Dead Language Ladies.
Hello, everyone. So today's episode is Cicero a bad friend? So, Grace, who is Cicero?
Who is Cicero? Well, he's a Roman politician, many things, man of many qualities, many jobs, even. He was born and lived in the first century BC, although I think he was born at the end of the second century BC, if I'm remembering correctly, somewhere around 100. And he was pretty roughly a contemporary of Julius Caesar. So he happened to be born into kind of a crazy time in Roman history.
The craziest time, some arguably may argue. The fall of the Republic.
Indeed.
And the rise of the Empire. He didn't really get to see the rise of the Empire, of course, but I'm sure he could have hazarded a guess as to how that was going to go. I'll add that Cicero was a novus homo. So that means he wasn't one of the elite families of Rome, even though he claimed his family was of ancient lineage. He was given the equestrian rank because he had considerable property, but he was sort of one of the first in his family, along with his brother, to sort of enter into the Roman magistracy.
Yeah, so novus homo means that like none of his ancestors had ever held the Roman consulship, but of course he did. He was very proud of that. And he really like broke into politics through his public speaking and kind of like his forensic oratory and his, you know, defense of some pretty high profile cases. So it was really like through his own skill and intelligence and argumentation that he was able to kind of become a leading figure in Roman politics rather than relying on his lineage.
Yeah, he knew how to argue. And that, yeah, that definitely spurred his entire career. And also was fatal to his,
in
to
the
his
end,
life and career.
It sure would be.
So today, our question, is Cicero a bad friend, is partly inspired by the many letters that we have of him. And we never really looked up how many he had actually written. But we have now surviving around 1,000 letters. About, I think, 900 of which were written by Cicero. The other 100 were written to Cicero. And of those about 900, around 400-something, about half, were written to a man named Atticus. So Atticus was basically his BFF.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. I mean, they met while they were studying together in Greece, kind of the like typical education system.
Study abroad.
They were studying abroad in ancient Greece, quite literally. And they met, and even, I mean, throughout the rest of their correspondence, you can see that like this love of literature and philosophy is something that they share. And Atticus, like, right? Atticus in Latin means Athenian. And I mean, he wasn't Athenian, he was Roman, but he has this nickname because like he loved like Greek literature so much that everyone called him Atticus, the Athenian guy.
And actually, I do have some printed out resources, especially from Perseus, which is, I highly recommend people, if you want to read the letters for free, go to Perseus online. And they have, so if you hear any like papers rustling, that's just my my research. But it seems that their intimacy began sort of, it was there, like it was at Athens specifically in around BC 79. When they met, Atticus had been there for several years already. He was 3 years older, and they began a very close and warm friendship. And we also should mention that his brother, Cicero's brother, Quintus, was married to Pomponia, a sister of Atticus. However, that marriage did not turn out very well. And if there was any point of contention in the friendship between Cicero and Atticus, it was this kind of tense marriage that was not going to work out.
Yeah,
but other than that, they loved each other.
We can see in like some of the letters written from Cicero to Atticus. That's another interesting point that we might talk about later, is there are no letters surviving written from Atticus back to Cicero. The correspondence as we have it, it's only the one side from Cicero. But we can see that like there will be this long letter where Cicero's talking about all these different things and the tone is super friendly. You can tell they're super close. But then when it gets to this marriage of Quintus and Pomponia, like it's clearly kind of a point of tension. The fact that like, I mean, they basically set up this marriage to have their siblings marry each other. And the fact that it's not working out so great, I think tests both familial and friendly loyalties. But clearly, I mean, their friendship sustained itself all the way to the end.
And we might want to mention now, like, who is Atticus? Because he studied, you know, I mean, he was a Roman, he's like Cicero, he's studying in Greece, he's, but he's not a politician, very specifically not a politician. He's basically into real estate and investment. And that's sort of how, he already had money, but he makes even more money because of his sort of good investments in property. And most importantly, he stays out of any civil war, any strife. He doesn't, you know, vote on controversial legislation. He just doesn't get involved. He stays super neutral, and he's really highly respected by both sides of several civil wars / contentions. When it was like Pompey, Crassus, and that whole thing, he stayed very neutral. Pompey really respected him, and then Caesar respected him, and Augustus came to really respect him, and they actually had their own correspondence until Atticus's death. So yeah, Atticus is totally, you know, unlike Cicero, Atticus is super neutral. And this sort of leads to the question of who published these letters that were written to Atticus. Was it Atticus himself? Did he leave out his own responses so that he would remain that kind of neutral public facade?
Right. I mean, it is interesting to think about the fact that if we knew, right, because Cicero is talking about all these political events, all these different players, and he's writing about them to Atticus. And we can presume that Atticus, you know, replied with his own thoughts, with his own advice. And if we had those letters, we would probably have a much different image of who Atticus was, right? We think of him as this neutral, disengaged figure. But behind closed doors, you know, at the dinner parties,
he could have been saying anything.
Wine was flowing, like, who knows?
So we do have a sort of theory. It's a fun theory for us. It's by no means for sure provable. It's, you know, but basically Atticus had a daughter, Attica. And Attica was actually had a nickname, Aticula, given by Cicero because Cicero loved her so much, you know, think like basically like a niece. And when Cicero, after Cicero dies, you know, and Octavius sort of becomes, has more power, he has Agrippa marry Attica. And so there's a possibility then maybe whether it was Atticus who published letters or maybe after Atticus dies, when Agrippa and Attica are still married together, maybe Octavius, who had a lot of respect for Atticus and also had a lot of respect for Cicero, maybe they had, with the help of Attica, published those letters of her father that he received from Cicero and then sort of published it posthumously that way. That's a fun theory for me, to think that Attica, the daughter of Atticus, was somehow involved in that publication because she really did love Cicero a lot too. So.
Absolutely. They were super close. And I think, like, I don't know. I like that theory. I've never seen it, you know, argued for in scholarship, but that doesn't mean it's not a possibility at all. And I think it, like, would actually make a lot of sense in terms of, like, you know, we don't know exactly when Cicero's letters were published. They clearly, like, became available in some collected form in the first century CE. We don't know, like, who collected them, who had full access to them. But I mean, I think, like, Attica, you know, she definitely would have had access to all of her father's letters from Cicero. So it's completely plausible that she would have done it. And it's also interesting to think about, like, okay, in the first century, like, Augustus has kind of solidified his power, his role in the Roman state, like, they probably would have wanted to, like, look back on the late Republic and, like, kind of deal with all of these things that happened, and, like, through kind of a narrative format, like, you know, what was this like from the perspective of Cicero? I think it's a very, like, human response. I think it makes sense. I like it.
Yeah, because Augustus certainly wanted to establish his connection to the sort of old Republic. That's why he marries Livia. So he might have been trying to, like, solidify his authority, like, you know, saying, like, I'm part of that. I'm not a dictator. Like, I'm not like Julius Caesar. I'm not trying to be a king. I'm actually resurrecting all these old traditions, and I'm honoring Cicero. Look how, you know, complex I am as a leader. But, you know, we won't know for sure. But Cicero wrote to Atticus, you know, very privately. They had a super, you know, they talked about everything. They talked about philosophy a lot. They talked about their writings. They were both writers, prolific writers, really. Cicero also received and wrote letters to prominent people like, you know, Pompey, Mark Antony, Lepidus, Plancus, like Brutus, Cassius, people involved in the assassination of Julius Caesar, just like all these really big names. But he also wrote to some random Romans. I mean, no one's really random, but some of these aren't those big players. And I think this sort of brings us to that Roman amicitia, which is sort of the point of a lot. Like, letter writing obviously has fallen out of fashion, but the reasons why Cicero was writing, I mean, it's obviously ingrained in Roman culture, but it's not actually that foreign to us. We just go about it differently now, this kind of building friendships and connections. And the way they write is super formal, but it's to keep the connections, to ask for favors, etc.
Right. So, yeah, Roman amicitia is a really distinct and unique cultural phenomenon, right? Amicitia, we typically translate it as friendship, because that's kind of, I mean, there's no one English word that corresponds to Roman amicitia. And the Latin word amicitia, like, etymologically, it's related to the words amicus, meaning friend, amor, meaning love. But amicitia, as this kind of cultural and political concept, is honestly, like, more similar to networking. It referred to, like, all of your political connections, like, all the people that, yeah, like Zoe said, that you could ask for a favor, that you could, you know, request for help if you were campaigning for election, something like that. And it was pretty much acknowledged that it was okay to, like, be manipulative and sort of not genuine with your friends, with your amici. And this was just kind of a commonly accepted part of this amicitia relationship. It wasn't, like, a deep emotional connection based on, like, personal loyalty, right? Like, that is what Cicero seemed to have with Atticus, almost more like a fraternal bond, right? They had a very, you know, strong emotional connection. They clearly cared very deeply about each other. And when we talk about, you know, Cicero's amicitia with other people, it's not the same thing at all. These are clearly relationships forged for the sake of political advantage, rather than, like, I actually enjoy spending time with this person.
Yeah. And we have also some funny, I mean, they're sort of connections. We have those where he's talking about maybe even just purely business affairs. Some of my favorite letters are actually him talking about, like, you know, can you move my money from here and put it and invest it here? Or, like, I want to withdraw a certain number. And he's sort of just talking about these day-to-day, just monetary things that he needs in his life. And some of them are really funny when, you know, for example, his son, who at some point was in Greece studying, or maybe not studying enough or not working enough, unclear, but he complains about his son a lot, and his son is always asking for more money, which I think is sort of, it's fun to see some of those eternal, like, timeless human themes echoed in the past. But he also, I mean, referencing his son sort of brings us to his wife and daughter. He marries, and I think about, like, 80 BC, the marriage is not very good, which doesn't really surprise me from what I've read of Cicero and his letters. He sounds sort of like he'd be difficult to be with, but they just did not, they just did not get along. And I think eventually they divorce.
Right. I mean, part of the thing was that his wife, Terentia's family, was very wealthy. So clearly it was an advantageous marriage for Cicero for that reason. But they did stay married for a very long time, really up until just a few years before Cicero died.
And then the sad story, the daughter that he has.
His daughter, Tullia.
She dies young-ish. Young. I think she dies young.
Yeah, she was young. She died in childbirth, if I'm remembering correctly.
And that was devastating for Cicero.
Very devastating. He really, like, kind of withdrew from public life. He went to, like, you know, his villas and just kind of didn't want to see anyone, talk to anyone, except for Atticus. Of course, he does write a lot of letters to Atticus in that period, you know, clearly demonstrating the emotional side of their amicitia. But something that's interesting on the subject of letters is that when Cicero is mourning for his daughter, Tullia, there are a series of correspondence between him and some other, you know, prominent Romans at the time, actually including Julius Caesar. And these other people were writing letters of consolation to him, basically consoling him for the death of Tullia. And it's really interesting. And I mean, you know, for its own sake, it kind of highlights the difference between how grief operates culturally in ancient Rome versus today. But some of these letters tell Cicero, like, stop mourning Tullia. She's better off because, like, the Republic is dying and Tullia doesn't have to see that. So she's actually better off than we are. Like, it's our situation that's worse. So cheer up.
You know, and in some ways they were right, because I think it would have been really hard for her to see her father killed. And I would assume that maybe they would let her live, potentially.
I mean,
and so she would have sort of seen that.
Yeah.
Maybe. Depends how Mark Antony was feeling.
Feeling that day, yeah.
Which, speaking of Mark Antony, because the letters, the most interesting letters that Cicero writes, I mean, appear slightly before, but mostly after the assassination of Julius Caesar, we thought we might, like, compare his letters to Mark Antony before, before the assassination, when Mark Antony was just, you know, a little helper of Julius Caesar, essentially, sort of right-hand man-ish. He was respected, but he wasn't respected because he was considered sort of a drunk and that he just wasted a lot of money.
There are some really interesting letters from the year 49 BC that we have between Cicero and Antony. So at this time, Caesar and Pompey were both still alive. They were kind of, you know, the conflict was becoming more intense between them, and there was pressure on, like, you know, the leading Romans to pick sides, right? Are you going to be on Caesar's side? Or are you going to be on Pompey's side? And we have this series of letters between Antony and Cicero, where Antony is basically trying to convince Cicero to stay in Italy, and that means, like, staying on Caesar's side. And it's clear, like, Cicero does not like Antony, right? He's not the biggest fan of Caesar. But, like, this exchange of letters that we have between Antony and Cicero, it's just so over the top in politeness. And they're clearly kind of going to extremes not to offend the other person or say anything that might be misconstrued. And they're, like, drawing on, you know, all the tropes, all the stereotypes of politeness. And the reason we have these letters is because Cicero, like, essentially forwarded them to Atticus, like how you forward an email. Like, he had them copied out and sent to Atticus, and he, like, includes some comments on them. And this like this letter from Antony that's like super polite, just over the top and flattery. Cicero calls it hateful, odiosos is the adjective in Latin, to Atticus. So it's just really interesting to see how they were using kind of this overly polite, formal tone, and yet kind of in private, they were talking about how much they hated doing this, how much they hated kind of this affect that they had to put on.
I mean, he literally, just to quote the letter, just so people have an understanding of how much he was flattering Mark Antony. Well, he says that thing in the beginning, like, for in that case, you'd have been able to perceive my affection for you, not merely by my language, but from my, quote, expression, eyes, and brow, as the phrase goes, for while I have always loved you, incited thereto, at first by your zeal in my service, and then by your actual favors, so in these times, the interests of the state have so recommended me to you that there is no one whom I regard with warmer affection. And he goes on and on and on, being just extremely flattering. Mm-hmm. And then to hear that being forward and being like, oh, I hated this. You know, like, this is, oh, that was horrible that I had to do that. It's just so funny. And might, you know, weigh in on the question, like, is Cicero a bad friend?
Yeah.
Like, were they even friends, really?
Yeah. I mean, that gets to the question of, like, amicitia. Like, we translate it as friendship, but it's not friendship at all. Like, this was, you know, they talked to each other in this way because it was mutually beneficial, right? They wanted to stay alive. They wanted to get through this political situation, this turmoil, and they had to do these things. So, like, Cicero's a bad friend, but he's a really good amicus, if you're thinking in ancient Roman terms.
Exactly. And we do see, you know, it's not just Antony. He talks about, I mean, he has letters to, I believe, Lepidus and also Plancus too, mm-hmm. Who are basically Caesar's guys. And they're like on the fence. Should we join Mark Antony and sort of rise up as like, you know, authoritarian Caesarian kind of figures? Or do we join Cicero in the crumbling Republic? That basically had no power at that point. And so the answer was obvious to them, but Cicero still held out hope. And we have a lot of letters, well, not a lot, but we have some letters to Plancus and Lepidus, basically trying to flatter them into loyalty. Spoiler alert, that did not work. And then we have letters to Atticus talking about Dolabella, who was in the East, and at first seemed like he was going to be working for the Republic's interest and ended up just siding with Antony. And then also, of course, about Octavian and his arrival on the scene and having hope for him in going against Mark Antony. And of course, spoiler alert, that didn't work out either at all. And we do have some letters to Brutus and Cassius as well. But yeah, essentially, like, to those men who were basically Caesar's minions, even after he was assassinated, Cicero was trying to like flatter them into submission. Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't work, there's a huge contrast with later letters. And I don't think we don't have any letters to, we might have a letter to Mark Antony being mean, but what we really have for sure, and they're not letters, but they're the Philippics that Cicero, I mean, the first one he gave, I think, as a speech in the Senate. The second one was never delivered formally, but it was supposedly like circulated, although we don't know really what that means. And essentially, in the Philippics, like, Cicero just completely destroys Mark Antony's character because Mark Antony's trying to become, you know, fill the role of Julius Caesar as a dictator. And Mark Antony doesn't hold back either in his responses, just to be clear. He was probably the first to provoke Cicero to be really rude. But that basically ended their friendship. But that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, because I think we wanted to start with, in terms of sort of a chronology, because the cool thing about these letters are that they have this step-by-step chronology to them, where you can really follow the events, you know, from the assassination leading up to Cicero's death, which are the prescriptions when Mark Antony and Octavian and Lepidus have formed their triumvirate and they're like taking over. So you see the whole growth of that quite clearly And
Cicero has some interesting perspectives on Octavian, right? When this kind of new kid comes on the scene, he has some thoughts.
Yeah, he's very flattering of him at first. I mean, he sort of calls him a boy, you know, coming on the scene.
19.
And he was 19. But he says, you know, Octavian really like respects me. Like he really admires me. You know, he sets this dinner up and all this stuff. And I think there's hope for this boy as long as the people around him don't corrupt him. So Cicero sort of blames all these like Julius Caesar's friends that were surrounding him as, you know, bad omens, basically. But I did want to mention before we get to Octavian that there's a period for a month after the assassination, Cicero believed that the Republic had been restored. He even says that he had like there was this joy with which he feasted his eyes on the just execution of a tyrant. And he called the assassins heroes, which is very different, and also liberators, liberatores. Whereas the on the other side, on Mark Antony's side, the assassins were called conspiratores, the conspirators, and called assassins, basically. but then, quickly, about a month later, Cicero realizes that this didn't really help anything. Within a month, he saw that the Constitution had not been recovered along with liberty. He says that. And he also says, we seem not to have been freed from a tyranny, only from a tyrant. And for though the tyrant has been killed, we obey his every word. So basically, like, he's talking about Mark Antony putting into law basically everything that Julius Caesar had wanted from the grave, essentially. And so he's really upset and disappointed by that. And then there's this whole thing with Brutus and Cassius deciding whether they should flee Italy, whether it was safe to remain and fight, or if they should leave and gather an army. And Cicero can see that civil war is on the horizon, so he advises them to get out of Italy, go to the east, raise the armies, and then come back. And there's an awesome letter that he writes to Atticus explaining this really messy emergency meeting of the liberators, where they were in Antium, probably at Cassius's house or villa, and they have this whole conversation about whether they should go. And it seems that Brutus really values Cicero's opinion. It's sort of cool. I recommend people check it out. It's June 8th, 44 BC, Atticus to Atticus from Cicero, and he does quote. Just to add, he does quote some really cool tragedy. He describes Cassius's eyes as breathing war, which is from Aeschylus's Agamemnon tragedy. But the point that I want to make with this letter is he ends it by talking about how he was appointed as legate by Dolabella, who will eventually betray Cicero and the Republic. And he says, I have now secured this. It is also nice to be permitted to exercise this right for 5 years. Although why should I think as far as 5 years? I feel like things are drawing to a close, but let's not say anything ill-omened. And he writes this at about a year and a half before his death. So he sort of already knows that he's going to die, which I think is sort of interesting to see literally in his letters,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the point is the letters clearly show after the assassination, and then, you know, once civil war is really going on, and obviously there's actual war that happens, and Octavian, you know, they have this whole thing where it seems like he really respects him, but then Octavian, his intentions become clear, and around this time, there's a famous letter from Brutus, Decimus Brutus, so not the Brutus that, not the et tu, not the Shakespeare Brutus, but the other Decimus Brutus who died at the hands of Mark Antony, essentially, up in the north. He writes to Cicero, and he says, essentially, that Caesar got wind of this epigram that Cicero coined about Octavian, and in Latin, so in English, it means, you know, the young man must be praised, honored, and immortalized. The Latin is laudandum, so praised. Adolescentem, the young man, ought to be praised. Ornandum, honored. And tollendum. And tollendum is, there's sort of a play on words here, which gets Cicero a little bit in trouble with Octavian, because the funny thing is that tollenda means to sort of immortalize, so it can have a good meaning, meaning that, you know, you become kind of mortalized like the gods. But the on the flip side, that means you have to be dead to be immortalized. So it's sort of this play on words of like, we'll raise him up, we'll, you know, praise him, honor him, and then we'll kill him.
And slash it's immortalize especially, him. I think, double-edged when you consider, right, the aftermath of Julius Caesar's death and the way that Octavian, like, essentially deified, immortalized Julius Caesar, his own father, by saying, like, his star went up, the comet, right? Like, Cicero, when he's saying tollendum, is essentially kind of playing on the way that Octavian exactly. turned Julius Caesar into a god after Julius Caesar was assassinated. So the implication
and
of saying,
let's do it again.
Yeah, let's let's run it back and do the same thing, you know, assassination and all, to Octavian.
And supposedly Octavian said that he had no intention of letting himself be, quote, immortalized or ut tolli possit. So, you know, Octavian was like, maybe not very amused to hear this, that Cicero intended to use him and then discard him as soon as he wasn't needed anymore. And whether that really, you know, spurred Octavian to, you know, go to Rome with his army and take the consulship by force, like, maybe if Cicero, whether Cicero had said that or not, it didn't really matter, because I think Octavian knew that Cicero was just using him. Mm-hmm. And Octavian wasn't going to be used. Clearly, the historical records show that he refused to be immortalized, and he eventually, you know, becomes a consul by force. And that's when he shows his true cards, that he's not going to be this Republican Senate pet to just defeat Antony. And he actually is going to side with Antony. And that only spells disaster for Cicero, because then there are the prescriptions. So turning to the prescriptions, we start to get less and less letters about it, because once Cicero knows that he's going to die soon, the letters become less and less political. Well, there's like, at first they're intensely political, and then by the end, you sort of, you know, he senses that his time is running out, and he tries to flee. There's a lot of stories about this. Many of them appear embellished, for sure, by these ancient historians, you know, about these bad omens, and he tried to go on his boat, but there were a bunch of, you know, crows or ravens or something that appeared on his ship and all this stuff. But essentially, he tries to flee, and then there were some mixed messages, I think, that he received, that maybe, you know, things weren't going that way and he should come return to Rome. Long story short, his name is on the list, the prescription list, as well as his brother and his nephew. And Mark Antony specifically asks for his head and his hands to be cut off, the hands that wrote the Philippics, and for them to be nailed to the rostra.
Which was the speaker
platform. Roman Forum. Yeah. So that's pretty brutal. And I think the crazy thing about that is that, you know, we have these letters from Cicero and Mark Antony, you know, flattering one another, you know, that Roman amicitia. And yet, I mean, they both wanted to kill each other. Like, they wanted to kill the other. Like, Cicero wanted, actually, Mark Antony to be also assassinated alongside Julius Caesar. And it was Brutus who was like, no, let's save his life. Like, we just need to get rid of Julius Caesar, which was maybe a mistake. Whereas, you know, so Cicero wanted him to die. And Mark Antony knew that very well. And
absolutely.
So,
and I think, like, you know, we look back on this now and we see Cicero as the victim and Antony as kind of this evil, you know, terrible murderer. And I think a lot of that just has to do with kind of the distorting lens of history and the fact that we have so many letters from Cicero, especially the ones to Atticus, that really humanize him and make us feel like we knew Cicero deeply personally. Like, you know, he was our own friend, right? Like, and I think like the letter format is also interesting for this because it presents one side of a conversation that, you know, we're kind of subconsciously invited to fill in the other half. So it really feels like, and I recommend that people go and read these letters because they are just so fascinating. But when you read them, you're invited to think about like, okay, what would the response be to this? How would I respond to this? And so you feel like you really do know Cicero on a personal level. And so I think the fact that he was killed in this way becomes even more horrific, and it makes us villainize Antony even more. But you're right, Cicero, you know, if the situation was reversed, probably would have done something, you know, equally horrific to Antony.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, what would have happened if the roles were reversed. Because in a way, maybe the roles were reversed. Like, Cicero did have an opportunity to kill him and didn't, essentially. He didn't press it enough, maybe.
Right.
Maybe he should have told Brutus and Cassius, like, you know, this has to happen. You guys don't understand. This has to happen. But he didn't, and so he basically opened the door for retribution by Mark Antony. And maybe he underestimated Mark Antony to a certain extent, because he was sort of considered, you know, a drunk and a, you know, someone who was going to brothels and partying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he himself, Mark Antony, never really escaped that reputation. Even though he gained power, it's probably one of the reasons why he sort of lost to Octavian, the boy that no one really, mm-hmm. not even Cicero, had thought would become what he did become. So yeah, his letters show, I mean, it's they have such range. It shows the complexities of Cicero as a person. Mm-hmm. It really shows off Roman Amicitia at its most infamous.
At its fakest and its most genuine. You get the whole range.
And so I guess the question, I mean, to our final verdict on this, is mm-hmm. Cicero a bad friend? What do you think?
I think that Cicero, I mean, ultimately, I think one of the reasons he died, was killed, is because he failed in making the most advantageous relationships of Amicitia. And so I think my final verdict is that Cicero could be a good friend. And, you know, earlier in his life and career, he had, you know, great relationships of Amicitia. And throughout his life, he remained a good, genuine friend with Atticus. But ultimately, I think it was a failure of Amicitia that caused him to die. So I would say Cicero's a bad friend.
So, I mean, I think I agree with you on one part, which is the part that he sort of failed with Roman Amicitia. But I do think that he was, in some ways, a really good friend to his true English word here, friends,
mm-hmm.
such as Atticus, Brutus, and Cassius. He stood by them literally to the death, knew it would be his death at a certain point, and still stood by them.
Mm-hmm.
And fought for Brutus and Cassius in the liberation of the Roman Republic. He fought, I mean, I would almost say, where was Atticus? Why wasn't Atticus trying to help save Cicero's life? I mean, obviously, if you stay neutral, there's not so much you can do. But, you know, Cicero was an extremely good friend to his friends. And that made anyone who was against those people his enemy. And I think he was okay with that. So I can't really fault him on staying true to his friend, whereas, like, in comparison, Plancus and Lepidus was considered by Decimus Brutus homo ventosissimus, the shiftiest of men.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, Cicero's trying to flatter them, I think the worst friends are Lepidus and Plancus for flattering Cicero and the Republic, and meanwhile getting ready to side with Mark Antony with seemingly no remorse at all. I think that's their bad friends, really. Whereas Cicero was always clear with who he supported. He was always pro-Republic, pro, Brutus and Cassius. So I think I'm going to be a little nicer, but I think he did fail in terms of, he wasn't going to stay neutral. He wasn't going to flatter his enemies for long.
Right.
And his refusal to bow down to them, essentially,
Yeah.
That was, his life was at stake.
Absolutely.
And that's all we have time for today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Dead Language Ladies.
And stay tuned for our next episode.
Wale.
Haide.